It should be so simple. It should be a case of handing over your passport and getting a stamp. Maybe you'll then have to go to another office and get another stamp, but that's it. That's a border crossing. That's all it should take to get from one country to another. And yet, as every traveller knows, that's rarely the case. To cross a border is to submit yourself to the will and generosity of a whole raft of people who really don't care one way or the other if you get to where you want to go. It's to queue for hours at clogged crossings. It's to grit your teeth and smile at unfriendly guards. It's to marvel at rituals both foreign and sometimes bizarre. It's to hope, to cross your fingers and toes, to be on your best behaviour, and to put on your most trustworthy face that this whole thing will work out okay, that you'll be allowed out of one country and into the next. Hi, I'm Ben Groundwater, and you're listening to Flight of Fancy, the traveller.com.au podcast. Today we're talking about a concept that's so exciting and yet so intimidating, so essential and yet so abstract and unnecessary. Crossing borders, going from one country to the next, tangling with customs and immigration, hoping it all goes well. Joining me to discuss the world's most memorable border crossings, from the scary to the spectacular, I have two travellers with more stamps in their passports than they've had hot dinners. First up, she's a longtime collaborator on Flight of Fancy, whose first memory of crossing a border involves the Berlin Wall, Uta Juncker.
Hi, Ben.
Hi, Uta. Great to have you along. Also with us, he's a travel writer and adventurer who's been to Antarctica more than 100 times, plus ridden motorbikes around the world for a grand total of 7 years, David McGonigal.
Hi, Ben.
Hi, David. That sounds like a long trip.
Well, it was two trips.
It was four trips.
4 years the first time and three the second, so I'm definitely getting my lap times down.
You are indeed. That's got to be a lot of border crossings as well, I would imagine.
A huge number, particularly up through Central America. That was kind of the nightmare where you're doing like three border crossings a day.
Wow.
Sometimes.
That is a lot. Do you guys like crossing borders, Uta? How does it make you feel?
I love borders, but that's probably because I've never had any spectacularly bad experiences, touch wood.
No, I mean, failures. But it's such a powerless experience, isn't it? Just submitting yourself to...
You know, I started travelling back in the days when everything had a border, and it was part of the anticipation. It was like, we are going into a different country now,
right,
and these people do things differently, and it's going to take a long time and they're going to ask pointless questions. And these days, you know, you can drive the length of Western Europe for the time being at any rate. And just, you know...
Well, I think Europe is the one that's really changed the most, isn't it? Because there's still some pretty dodgy borders out there.
Because that's where my first experience was. So I can remember as a kid driving through Western Europe, doing every border from Austria to Switzerland to Luxembourg to, you know, to Andorra.
Yeah, right.
I mean, there's a border many people haven't crossed. So the fact that they all just vanished is, you know... It's a bit of nostalgia going for me.
Yeah, true. Do you get excited crossing borders, David?
Nervous rather than excited.
Right,
I'd go the other way to Uta. I hate border crossings.
Do you really?
I think there shouldn't be any borders.
Yeah.
I'd much prefer the world if there was just none and the world was differentiated by climate or whatever.
Yeah.
But it wasn't this kind of artificial creation where lines have just been kind of drawn. And
I was speaking to James Thornton, who's the CEO at Intrepid, and about this subject, and he was saying he gets this sort of real feeling of existentialism when he goes across a border, particularly when you're in that no man's land in between two borders and you're looking out and thinking, what even are these things that we've sort of created and that have become these lines in the sand, which really don't mean anything at all.
Probably one of the strangest ones we've ever done is Point Robert, and obviously the 49th parallel is a division between Canada and the US.
Yeah.
But there's kind of a suburb of Vancouver that goes across there, so it's actually American.
Right.
So it's regarded as part of America. And the only use I've ever found for that place is when Canada was doing its regular summer beer strikes.
Right.
We used to water ski across to Point Robert, fill the boat up with beer, and then come back and let it kind of take care of us for the next few weeks.
When was that? That sounds like the most 80s thing I've ever heard. Water skiing across the border.
Don Johnson should have been involved somehow.
Crates of beer on your shoulder.
No, it was late 70s, but same thing.
That sounds incredible. Uta, have you experienced many border towns? I've always found border towns to be really sketchy, dodgy places.
Border towns do tend to be very sketchy.
What's with that? Why does it attract the sort of...
Because everyone has evil intentions.
I feel that in border towns.
But it's actually funny because just while we were talking now, I've just had a flashback that is gleamingly obvious about my relationship to borders, which is my grandmother's house was about 15 minutes walk from the border to East Germany, between East and West Germany. But it was a bit... So it was outside of town and there was no border crossing. So it was just a border. But so we used to go down, my brother and I, and like suddenly the road stopped and there was a fence and then there was no man's land and then there were border towers with guards. And, you know, my brother always used to go, they're going to shoot you. They're going to shoot you. You know, so to me... the idea of a border town, although it may be sketchy, is actually quite exciting because there's actually a town. It's right. Not just a border.
Right, okay. Yeah, I get you. David, you must have been through some pretty dodgy ones, wouldn't you?
I think they are. I think because everyone who wants to kind of make something out of the fact that there's different rules on one side than the other wants to live near the border so they can exploit it and the people that come across too.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if you do cross from Vancouver into Blaine, which is the town directly across from White Rock, which is the Canadian side, into Blaine, which is the US side, is just full of porno cinemas and stuff.
Yeah, right.
Because the Canadians obviously have more restrictive laws so that everyone comes across. And so the people who want to run porn cinemas and do dodgy exchange deals are going to live near borders.
Yeah, right. In a similar vein, although it's a state border, not an international border, when you drive from LA to Vegas, you know as soon as you're in Nevada, because there is a town there right on the border filled with casinos. It's just the shortest distance possible to drive to get to gamble.
For when Vegas is just too far.
Right, exactly.
And I think Reno, Harrah's in Reno, they actually found that built the casino so it went slightly across into the Californian area, so they had to take all the slot machines out of that corner and turn it into a cloakroom.
Yeah, right. Well, Uta, let's get back to the Berlin Wall, because I'm just fascinated by that, and you had that experience of crossing from the west to the east.
So when I was six, and this was, you know, so I was used to the men with guns being in the towers a long way away from my grandpa's, you know, you can see them, but when we drove from West Berlin into East Berlin, and there were two sets of checkpoints, and all along the way, there were men in uniforms with guns not smiling. And I cried the whole way. I don't think my brother was in the car, but he was in my head. He was telling me they were going to shoot me. And it was, you know, and there were long stretches. You know, that no man's land is basically a shooting alley. And you know, you feel very, very vulnerable when you cross it.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I went back after the wall came down and there were just loads of boutiques on that exact spot.
So what is that spot? What's
the, so it's now Friedrichstrasse, which is one of the main streets in Berlin, and it's lined with shops on both sides. And I actually stood there like some visitor from outer space going, this can't be right, this can't be right. I do not understand. It just would not compute for me.
Yeah, right. Is there some sort of marking on the ground now where you know where the wall was?
Not on Friedrichstrasse, I don't think. There's, if you look, there's a little Checkpoint Charlie memorial, but it's hard to find. I mean, all the bloody neon signs and big display windows.
And the actual Checkpoint Charlie that's there now is not the Checkpoint Charlie.
No, the actual Checkpoint Charlie was terrifying.
Yeah, and now it's like a bunch of actors dressed up in American serviceman gear standing next to some sandbags.
Yeah,
it's all very tacky.
It's that sort of sense of, I mean, it's a weird thing to be nostalgic for, that sense of fear. But, you know, I thought when I crossed the border from South Korea into North Korea, I thought, right, we're going to do it. And I happened to be traveling with an East German. And, you know, the border guard I got was a woman with red lipstick who smiled at me and was kind of like, oh, you don't know how to run this show, honey.
So you must have it from South Korea to North Korea.
Yeah, went into North Korea and, you know, had a lovely time and... Yeah, you know,
you must have got them on an off day, because crossing the DMZ from South Korea to North Korea, I thought was one of the most chilling experiences
really?
In my life.
Yeah, right.
Because you're driving past all the tank traps. There's just guys with guns everywhere. You can actually see where the bunkers are, where they're going to actually launch the missile strikes.
But the people were nice. They smiled.
No, there was no smiling. And even when we crossed into North Korea, I was actually taking a photo from my hotel room. And a guard about 100 metres away saw I'd taken a photo out of the hotel window and came along to tell the hotel to make sure that whoever's taking photos stops immediately.
Oh, look, and definitely we had the experience of driving down streets where they had closed off the side of the street that we were on, so there was no traffic, and the people were walking on the opposite side of the road. And we were in quite a big vehicle, and none of them saw the vehicle. All of them were looking, eyes on the ground, what vehicle? There is no vehicle with foreigners. We cannot see any foreigners. Until this little girl, maybe 5 years old, came around the corner on her way home from school, and she saw the vehicle. Her eyes lit up, and she was waving, and I was going, shall I wave back? She was so cute. So I waved back, and then she waved more. And in the end, the entire bus was waving, and her arms were windmilling. And eventually she ran down the street so excited, clearly running home to tell her mother. And the East German beside me just looked at me and went, there's a future class traitor.
Have you guys had run-ins with police at borders?
I was thinking back to my worst border crossing and my hatred of them. And that would have been on my first bike ride and going from Afghanistan into Iran. And Afghanistan, back then, Chicken Street, kind of land of dope. And Iran had a death penalty for anyone found with dope.
Right.
And so the night before we crossed the border, we actually stripped our bikes check that no one had actually planted dope on us.
Yeah.
We got across and we were talking to someone else who said, yeah, they came across by bus. And someone on their bus had some joints they had missed in one of their jackets.
Mm-hmm.
And they were taken off the bus around behind a building. There was a sound of a bullet, of a shot. And then they just come out and wave the bus on, leaving him all his gear on the bus.
Wow.
So they have no idea what happened to him. But, yeah, and that was kind of that chilling. So we really checked.
I bet, yeah.
And then going through, yeah.
Was that a hard border to get across? Or was
They were actually really professional.
Yeah.
So it wasn't as much of a nightmare as I thought it would be.
Yeah, okay.
But I'm sure that if we had had anything, they would have found it. And we were just really worried someone might have planted something.
Absolutely.
This would be a very easy way to get rid of someone.
Yeah. The only real run-in with police that I've had was fairly recently, actually. Coming, I was flying home from Kazakhstan, from Almaty, and I had to go via Urumqi in western China. And it was only sort of a 10-hour stopover in the city, but it was enough that I had to leave the airport and go and stay in a hotel and come back again. And Urumqi is a bit of a police state, basically. They've had a lot of trouble with, well, not a lot of trouble, but some trouble with terrorism there. And it's very sort of heavy-handed police presence now. And so I went through the border and I was one of the only foreigners on board. I have a beard. I was asked if I was a Muslim by several people, which I'm pretty sure they're not allowed to actually ask. And I was getting a bit frustrated with it and maybe visually frustrated. I don't know. But the police ended up taking me aside and stopping me from leaving the airport. Sat me down in a seat and made me take my belt and my shoes off and run all this stuff through the conveyor belt, through the scanner again, and really sort of made me feel like if I set a foot wrong, I'm going to end up in jail here. And they held me for about half an hour or so and eventually let me go. I'm not sure if that was just to amuse themselves or what. but it's a very scary feeling because there's really, you can't say anything, you can't do anything, you can't complain in a situation like that. You just have to go with it and just hope that you're doing the right thing and everything works out all right.
Yeah, I have slept in a police cell at a border.
Right, there you go.
But that was because there was some paperwork. There was a problem with some paperwork. The only supervisor that could actually give me permission to finish crossing the border, and I'd left one country and I couldn't get into the next, and he had gone home for the day, so he was going to be back at 7:30 or whatever the next morning.
Right.
And so they said, so you're kind of stuck here. We can put you in a cell for the night. And I thought, well, that sounds fine. So they put me in the cell. They didn't actually lock the door.
That's good.
That's nice to know. And then they said, oh, you're now officially our prisoner, we have to bring you some food. You want us to bring you some food from town? So I said, great. So they brought all these really amazingly Central American dishes, kind of came back and had a great meal sitting in my very green cell, not unlike the studio.
Well, we haven't locked the door as well, so that's good. The team at Intrepid Travel know a thing or two about border crossings. They've been operating multi-country trips around the globe for over 25 years. Want to see all Africa has to offer? Take in 10 countries on their epic 63-day adventure. Or explore Central America, from Mexico all the way to Panama City on their 58-day odyssey. And the best bit? Their local leaders make border crossings easy. Start planning your adventure today at intrepidtravel.com. Uta, Israel is a fairly notorious border, isn't it?
Well, a big part of the problem with Israeli borders, of course, is that many people don't want to get a stamp in their passport. Because once you have an Israeli stamp in your passport, there's a whole bunch of Middle Eastern countries that aren't going to let you in.
Yeah.
And I actually have a friend who was in Israel and decided to do something that was really quite reckless and decided, given that she was going on to travel elsewhere in the Middle East, she decided to go and have a weekend in Egypt.
Okay.
And that was kind of like, well, even if you stop the Israelis stamping your passport, which they tend to be kind of obliging about, you're still going to get the Egyptian stamp in your passport. But she, with the confidence of youth, decided that she could manage this. Mm-hmm. And so she first goes to his Israeli passport and does that thing of clutching her passport to the chest and going, I'm not giving you this till you promise not to stamp it. And they were like, well, what's the story? And she explained, she was like, the Egyptians are going to stamp it. She was like, I'll worry about that. So gets through the Israeli side, then goes to the Egyptian side and is clutching the passport and going, I want you not to stamp my passport. And I'm going, no, we have to stamp your passport. Going, no, you really don't. If the Israelis don't need to, you don't need to either. And talked them into not stamping it. So that was fine. So she went, had a weekend, you know, scuba diving in the Red Sea. Great. Yep. Comes back. Goes to the, you know, does the whole process in reverse, goes to the Egyptians, go, I'm going to give you my passport and you're not going to stamp it because they didn't stamp it on the way in, you don't need to stamp it on the way out. And then anyway, yeah, okay, so fine. So fine, goes to Israel and goes, okay, so don't stamp my passport because, you know, no one's stamped my passport. And Israel's going, where's your Egyptian stamps? And she's right. going, well, I talked them out of it. It's like, no one talks the Egyptians out of it. Where's your Egyptian stamps? Where is she's like, I've just walked from over there. Where else can I come from? But, you know, it took an hour to convince them to let her back in because she didn't have those stamps.
Yeah, right. Okay. I found Israel the most difficult thing by far was getting out of the country.
unpacking your whole bag.
Yeah, yeah. I got hassle going into the airport. My driver was stopped because he was from East Jerusalem. And apparently a lot of the aid workers who are coming out of Palestine usually come out through East Jerusalem. And so we were stopped and questioned. And then finally got into the airport, and you get a stamp on the back of your passport, and apparently that sort of signifies what sort of level of risk you are, and then you go into certain security channels and are taken aside and questioned again, and everything searched in your bag, and of course that was me, and I was like, guys, I'm just trying to leave.
That actually reminds me of going from Lebanon into Syria back when there was something to see in Syria because it hadn't all been destroyed, which is another very sad story, but I was travelling with Glenn A. Baker, the rock historian and travel writer, and we were told, whatever you do, don't say you're a journalist. Do not ever say you're a journalist because you just don't want to say that anyway because they immediately think you're a war correspondent rather than someone that's there to look at the ruins and take photos. And so we got to the Lebanese-Syrian border. Lebanon was easy to get out of. Syria was being difficult. And our driver, to try and speed things up, said, don't you know these people are really important Australian journalists? And then it changed. Yeah. The atmosphere changed. It actually got really civil. And they said, we will stamp your passports and then you will report to whatever it is, Central Security, tomorrow morning at 10 a.m.
Right.
Which we did. And they decided we were completely harmless, if not gormless. And instead, they just gave us a whole bunch of brochures and sent us on our way.
Right. Okay. Well, it worked out well. One of my favourite border crossings, not for good reasons particularly, but when you cross from China into Mongolia or the other way around on the Trans-Mongolian train.
No, never again.
Because the interesting thing is when you're on the train, you stay in the same train, but the gauge of the tracks is different. So they have to change the bogies, which are the wheels. So you have to stay on board the train while they jack the train carriages up and take the wheels off and put them back on again, which for train nerds is, you know, one of the greatest things you can experience. For the rest of us...
the toilets are locked for 12 hours.
That is a thing. That is a thing, yeah.
I dreamt of toilets. I was on a motorcycle, and we crossed quite well from Russia, Siberia, into Mongolia. Had a great time in Mongolia, came back to the border, and the Russian border guards were just really difficult. And they said, where we rode up to, where the road goes to, they said, this isn't a land border. You can only cross out of Mongolia by train. And we had motorcycles. Mm-hmm. And they said, oh, and by the way, there's no goods carriage on the train, so you can't get your motorcycles on the train.
Wow.
So you can't come across. Any of the locals can. And so literally we turned to the guys behind us in the immigration line and said, will you ride our motorcycles across and we will meet you in the town tomorrow while we go back and get the train across. So basically gave...
And this is in a border town where...
And this is
where all the world's best people congregate.
Yeah, where all the best people live. And so literally that's what we did. We had to leave the keys. The keys, of course, you know, the panniers, everything was on the bike. We just kind of took what we could for a night in town and then the train the next morning. We arrived in the central square thinking, what are the chances our bikes will turn up? And then we could hear them approaching. We decided the guys had probably been riding them at 200 kilometres an hour for the last 24 hours. So they kind of roared into view. I did check, and he had managed to do about 200 kilometres from when we left him 3 kilometres away. So he'd obviously gone to visit everyone on his new hot bike.
Look at this thing.
But at least he brought the bike back and it was still in one piece. So I was really grateful for that. But there was literally a time where you're thinking, how am I going to put an insurance claim in going, oh, no, I gave him the bike, yeah, gave him the key, yeah, and then just walked away because yeah. that's what we had to do. So, yeah.
I guess, you know, you put your faith in humanity, sometimes it's rewarded like that.
Yep.
And sometimes it's not. When we crossed the border on the train, it was fascinating. There is clearly a thriving smuggling trade between China and Mongolia. And I don't know what this... Well, they're smuggling a lot into Mongolia, but it seemed to range everything from small white goods to salamis, which was a little bit weird. But anyway, these people just started... Basically, the cabins were being dismantled as people started hiding stuff. And locals, like, came into our cabin and started trying to hide stuff, and we were chasing them out, going, take your dirty salami and get out of here. Not in my cabin. And then I got up at about 2 in the morning because, you know, the toilet was being locked at 2:15 and I had my strategy all planned. And the conductress was, like, walking down very stealthily down the corridor. So I was, like, peeking out to see what she was doing. She went to the... She had something in her hand and she went to the rubbish bin and she lifted the bag with the rubbish out and put this thing underneath it and put the bag on top. And I thought, ah... Went to the toilet, got out. Next morning, guards come. Guards know every hiding place on this train. They are going straight to where everyone had gone yesterday. Even there were people who'd rolled back the carpet in the corridor and found the little compartments for them. Nah, they just rolled that carpet straight up. Did not go near the rubbish bin.
Right, okay.
Like, I think there was a little bit of money changing hands there. Yeah, and it was like... Look under the carpet, look in the ceiling, look over there, but don't look under the rubbish bin, okay?
I do love a border crossing on a train. There's something really romantic about, you know, the guards coming down the carriage and checking everyone's papers and everything. It's sort of old world throwback.
As long as the toilets are open.
Sure, which they usually are.
I love the one in the Eurostar that I did about 3 weeks ago where I was looking out and I thought, oh, the cars are driving on the other side of the road. So I guess we're not in the UK anymore. That tunnel we just went through must have been the channel.
Yeah, right.
But it was just that easy. Yeah, so you get on the train and then suddenly everyone's driving on the other side of the road, so you know you're in France.
Right. Yeah, there you go. Easy. Have you guys found any borders unexpectedly difficult? I've always found going into Canada really quite tough, which you don't really expect, I don't think. We're friends. But flying in, every time I've flown into Vancouver, I've been grilled, you know, really intensely, and maybe I'm also jet lagged and not really making much sense.
Oh, no, the only time I have ever had passport issue or, you know, like search bag issues, was it Vancouver? It was Canada, definitely. Mm-hmm. And it was right down to, Missy, take all your stuff out of your suitcase. And they're going, put all your stuff over there. I'm going, that thing's covered in white powder. And they're going, don't you worry about the white powder. I was going, don't you worry about the white powder. I did a bit of housekeeping before I would unpack my suitcase.
So, and I recently flew through LAX to Vancouver. And LAX I went through in about 15 minutes. It was so easy. The nightmare of LAX seems to... with the new airport seems to be over. I hope, and I would touch wood, except it would probably resonate through the building. But then I got to Vancouver, and the Vancouver arrivals hall was completely full. So you have to go through two stages. Each of them were about 20 minutes, just lined up in a cattle race, basically, for hundreds and hundreds of metres to come into Vancouver. And it didn't take very long, and they're quite polite and all the rest of it, but it was just ridiculously badly organised.
Right.
And I remember when Air Canada first started doing direct flights from Sydney to Vancouver, the airport sign at the airport was quite simple. It just said Miss America, which I thought was very clever. Yeah. And now I'm thinking, why did LAX suddenly become so easy and Vancouver suddenly become so difficult?
Yeah, there you go. I have no idea. What about scenically spectacular border crossings? David, you and I have both travelled from Argentina into Chile or the other way around over the Andes. That's pretty much the most spectacular border crossing.
Yes.
Yeah. And you're literally just, again, I was on a motorcycle and you get to the top of the pass and then from there it's just a series of switchbacks all the way down to sea level effectively from what seems like the top of the Andes.
Yeah.
I think there's a tunnel now because I haven't done it by road for a while.
Okay.
So it's probably largely over, but it was just such a spectacular border. And I was travelling with my then wife on her own motorcycle and she said she got passed by the school bus because it was gravel on every corner and it was just one switchback after another.
Yeah, right. Well, the crossing I've done is from Pucón in sort of about down in the south of Chile over to San Martin de los Andes, and it's this spectacular trip where, again, you start off around sea level and you climb up into the Andes, and then there's a lake, a sort of high-altitude lake, which you have to cross on a ferry, and then you jump on another bus over the other side of the lake and then go across the border there, and it's just amazing scenery up there. It's so beautiful.
What? I was going to say, it's not so much spectacular, but a quaint way of crossing a border, I haven't done this, but it's kind of on my list, is somewhere along the border of Sweden and Finland, there's an 18-hole golf course. 11 of the holes are in Sweden and 7 are in Finland. And you can play your way across, and I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah, right. Well, there's a bizarre place in Belgium and the Netherlands. There's a city, and because of the way it was divided up, and I can't remember the story of why it is this way, but basically in this town in the Netherlands, there are small pockets of Belgium throughout it. And they're marked by little sort of different pavers on the road.
Oh, cute.
And so some people live in these tiny little Belgian islands within the Netherlands. It's really bizarre. There's no actual border to cross, but interesting.
But the paving stones tell you where you
That's
are.
That's right, yeah.
And when you're talking about the spectacular ones, I've got to say that going to the Sun Highway, which goes from Canada, from the Yukon, across into Alaska, mm-hmm. is spectacular. It's a dirt road, and it just takes you up over some high passes, and there's brilliant mountain scenery all around. It's just a beautiful drive. And when you cross the border, the first town you come to is Chicken, Alaska.
Right.
And everything you're thinking about border towns does not apply to Chicken, Alaska. It's just the quietest little place. And it's called Chicken because apparently when the first people came in to settle it, there were ptarmigan everywhere. And they were going to comment on that, but no one knew how to spell ptarmigan, so they decided to call it chicken. And that is what the Alaskan Gazette gives as the official reason how it got its name.
Oh, that's so cute.
That is cute. In a completely different sense, there's a crossing from South Africa into Namibia. Rather than sort of being cold climate and amazing snow, that it's right in the middle of the desert, basically. And there's the Orange River that runs between the two countries. And there's this weird little outpost that you can get to only by car. And there's a little car ferry. It just fits one car on the ferry, and it's on one of those sort of fixed cables. And, you know, you sort of go into the office and monkeys run all over the car while you're in the office signing your papers. And then you jump in this tiny little car ferry and it chugs across the river and off you go into Namibia. And
perfect.
We've, you know, not a soul is sighted, basically.
Oh, that's very cute.
Yeah, it's lovely. Now, guys, what's the sort of key to making your border crossings as painless as possible?
Judging by our conversations, I think be a chicken, don't be on a motorbike.
Yeah, true. David, are there any...
Be organised and be polite.
Yeah, yeah.
It's definitely not the time to either be snarly. I think Nepalese actually thrive on that. They wait to see if they can make you lose your temper. And as soon as you do... they've won.
Yeah.
And you're doomed. So you actually have to stay calm no matter what. And you may not be inside, but you can't show anything on the outside. And just being organized too, because, you know, I guess these guys are doing it. They're not going to be really highly paid. So having everything you need rather than going, oh, what do you want that for? I don't have that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just going to be really annoying.
If you're going to need passport photos, have passport photos. If you're going to need forms to fill out, have a pen. It's all of those. Yes. You know, if you need a visa, make sure you got a visa. Make sure your passport has got 6 months validity on it. All of those little things that could trip you up, you just need to make sure you're on top of, really. Well, guys, thank you very much for joining me. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks, Ben.
If you would like to read any travel stories by me or Uta or David, you can find them at traveller.com.au. And you can subscribe to Flight of Fancy on iTunes or your favourite podcasting app. We'll see you next time on Flight of Fancy.